Hi friends, my name is Kyle Malnati, and for the last 2 years, I've been the host of the Kyle Malnati Show, which is a podcast and YouTube show that has been geared towards connecting with real estate investors, specifically in Denver, Colorado, and I've had a really fun time doing that. But over the last couple of years, I've started to have a more national audience that is real estate professionals, specifically realtors. And as the broker owner of my own firm, my goal is to connect with you on a national level and share some encouragement, also to empower you and to educate you with best practices from my friends. These are folks that I've met and interacted with across the country. And so we are announcing that we're going to be launching the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. It's going to be for folks that are interested in real estate brokerage and interested in getting better at what they do on a daily basis. The word calibrate is all about this intentional change, this intentional iteration, working towards a better future. And so I'm very excited to be launching this new podcast and having new episodes for you to watch. It's been a year since I've been in this room, and I'm so excited for you to watch this next episode. So enjoy the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. Broadcasting from Columbia, South Carolina, you are tuning in to the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati. I'm sitting here with two great friends and leaders in real estate. We've got Brad Allen, broker owner and broker in charge of the Art of Real Estate, based here in Columbia, South Carolina, where we are recording. And I've got Eric Rollo with William Ravis Real Estate. So guys, we're here to talk about, we're gonna go through a deep dive and talk about hiring, bring people on our team. We had the fortune of sitting in on Brad's team meeting, and real estate's all about people, both the people you interact with as a real estate broker, but then also people that you bring onto your team. And Brad, you and I have had a lot of discussions about hiring and just the concept of treating your business professionally like you would as a doctor or an attorney, having people support you. And so since we're here in your office, I'll have you kick it off just talking about how you structure your team and also how you like to support your agents.
Right. Yeah, so it's a really good question. So again, I'm one of the co-owners and the broker in charge of a boutique real estate firm here in Columbia, about 18 agents, six coordinators. We have two offices here, one in Columbia, one in Greenville, South Carolina. And we decided about 10 years ago when we formed our team that we realized one single agent couldn't do it all well. So we started to compartmentalize, and as we found a need, we filled that need with either a coordinator, staff member, some people call them assistants, we don't, that's not what we use. And some people fill that need with an agent, buyer's agent, seller's agent, whatever it might be. So that's kind of morphed into a team that hopefully this year will do close to 400 transactions, and will do hopefully around $70 million in sales. But along that way, we've had a lot of heartache, a lot of heartburn, bad hires, good hires, and we've learned a lot. And so what we do is we always have this mantra, like, you don't go to the doctor's office and the doctor doesn't check you in, take your blood pressure, write your prescriptions, weigh you, and do all the little stuff. All very important. Every bit of that is very important. But the doctor specializes. And so not necessarily am I the doctor. The agent might be the doctor. The coordinator might be the doctor. It might be somebody else. But we compartmentalize so we can specialize. And if we can specialize, we can bring a really good experience to clients. And so along that, we go through a hiring process. And I was fortunate enough to have these two guys sit in on an interview yesterday because we were replacing a gentleman that is moving on. He's going to to sell houses in Raleigh, which is out of our market, and he has been a big influence in our business, what we've created, and he's helped create that. He's been on the coordinator side. So as much as we hate to see him leave, we have to replace that role, and it's a media, we call it a media coordinator. So photography, videography, social media, and so we're hiring. And so the way I structure my hiring process is we hire a headhunter. I used to try and do it all myself, and I just wasn't getting very qualified candidates. We're a small area compared to Denver and Boston. So I hire a headhunter because they're specialized in that process. I'm specialized in selling houses, and I don't want people trying to sell their own houses or try to be part-time and sell houses against me, right? I want to be the guy. So why not use a headhunter? Well, one reason is they're really expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're 15 to 20% of the salary sometimes. Up front, write a check, hope the candidate works out. But they vet them. They do a lot of things that I don't have time and don't know how to do. So once we get that, we get the resume from some possible candidates, and we send them two assessments, and these are coordinators again. Locus of control, which is, does the world run you when things go bad, or do you want to run the world? So if your broker gives you back paperwork because it's messed up, are you mad at your broker for being like over your shoulder and micromanager, or you're like, oh man, I didn't do that, my bad. So that's how I equate that. And the other one's Strength Finders. It's assessments, books. There's all kinds of things out there. And so we want to focus on strengths to make sure they're going to fit the role that we need. And Strength Finders, real quick, breaks down in four parts. It's are you an achiever? Are you kind of an influencer? Do you build relationships? Or are you strategic thinking? So depending on who we're hiring, whether it's an agent or coordinator, they have specific roles. So I don't necessarily want a lot of agents with a lot of strategic thinking, because most likely they're going to try and be me. I mean, they're going to try and think forward. And so not that I don't want those, but I want people that can get it done and maybe build relationships, because that's what real estate's about. Mm-hmm. But my coordinators, I want them to get it done and build some influence, because when we roll out a new idea or project, they need to be able to influence the group. So that's how we do it. Then we do an interview, which these two guys sat in on, and this poor gentleman didn't have a chance yesterday, but it went really well. And then we usually call them back for a second interview, where my partner interviews them, my coach interviews them, and then we bring them back a third time for usually a team meeting, and we then make an offer. So.
And then Eric, on your team, you had expressed to me that you've had a maybe a little bit more unconventional way of starting to work together, and that process of getting people on your team has been maybe a little bit different than Brad's process of hiring a headhunter and having someone help with the recruitment. So just talk how you've built your team, what type of team you have, and the structure of it.
Absolutely. So working with William Ravis up in Boston, I have a team of five individuals now, and that it's not how it originally started. I actually started with a business partner about two and a half years ago, and unfortunately that relationship didn't work out. We're still very good friends, and I still have a lot of respect for the gentleman I was partnered with. We still work together, but it wasn't working out in terms of just our equal pull in that partnership. So as I started to restructure, I went back and looked at certain qualities I needed, and my manager recommended two of our team members to me. But I've never made an intentional hire. I've never gone out and used a headhunting firm or put job posting on Craigslist or on Indeed or anything like that. I've always hired based on word of mouth. So I started with one agent that worked with me as a buyer and rental agent, and now we've expanded to one part-time agent and three full-time agents on the team.
So I think what's really cool is the three of us have all been recognized nationally by Realtor Magazine 30 Under 30. That may not be the coolest part of what we're about to say here. The cool part is that we all operate our businesses differently. So Brad just talked about a very structured, formal, and also expensive process of hiring a headhunter. Eric talked about a more organic kind of attraction to the team. And I think something that probably fits your personality very well, and also fits your personality very well. And then that dovetails right into the assessment piece of it. So Eric's team is structured based on his personality. Brad's is structured based on his. Kyle's is structured based on mine. And so what we do is we want to make sure that we're constantly communicating through the interview process. This is how we operate, because that person's coming to join you,
yep.
Not vice versa. You're not coming to join them. And legendary coach Lou Holtz, I heard him on a podcast earlier this year, where he used to tell people at Notre Dame that, look, I don't care how you wore your socks in high school. You're here at Notre Dame, and we're going to have you become more of us than us become more of you. Wow. You know, and so the idea is that, yes, we want everybody to have their own personality and their own individuality, but they need to be able to work really well with the team leaders.
Absolutely.
And they also need to help promote the brand further. So the interesting thing about our business being realtors is we have the experience on both sides of the table. What we mean about that is when you become successful enough that you realize you can't do this all on your own, you need to start hiring people. And there's really hasn't been a great manual for that. So some of it's done by failure, frankly, and we'll dive into that. The other part of it, though, is that we're constantly enlisting appointments. We're constantly being interviewed by the public to decide whether they're gonna list their house or their commercial property, in my case, with me or with someone else that's a competitor. And so we thought it'd be really fun to put some tips out there for everybody to consume on. If you're the interviewer, here's some things that we try to look for. But then if you're the interviewee, these are some things that we also try to convey across the table as we're being interviewed by a client. So let's talk about being the interviewee.
Okay.
I think that we had the opportunity yesterday to sit live in an interview and watch this young gentleman who I thought, frankly, did a great job considering the circumstance. There's five of us in a room, and he's kind of in a little bit of the hot seat. I mean, I think we were very kind to him, and he went along with it. But you know, if you're the interviewee, what are some things that you want to be conveying to the people that are being interviewed? So you were interviewing, it was a position that you're actually going to spend money on.
Yeah.
So what are some things you think that a candidate should convey to you as an interviewee?
Well, one thing that was really a good example from yesterday, and I didn't pick up on it, but one of my coordinators who was sitting on the interview, we were hiring for a creative role. And not to knock the gentleman, but his resume was white paper, Times New Roman, 12 font, no creativity to it. So my big thing is I think resumes are worthless because you all look, everybody looks good on a resume. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just happens. So if that's your best foot forward on a resume, so go a little above and beyond. Kyle was saying when he was interviewing somebody for marketing, it was everybody's was different colors and different fonts and smelled different, looked different, you know, paper mache or, you know, origami. So the point is, like, look at the roles you're hiring, right? And I think what was really important to me is that they show up early, that they're on time. And again, interview is the second best, like, way to lie, because you show up with the best suit. So if you show up disheveled, or you show up unshaved, or not unshaved, but unkept, I guess is a better word, that's a big deal.
For sure.
And I think the other part that really gets to me is obviously a firm handshake. I know that's just basic principles of life for me, but a firm handshake, eye contact, and then if you're, whatever you're going after, if it's a creative role, I'd love to see some artwork, or the, you know, your portfolio of work. So that way we can really dive in and show up with your resume. I know I sound like a headhunter, but it's just really funny how much that really does play into somebody that is not trained in interviewing people. This is not what I made a education like out of. So
yeah. So Eric, how about yourself? What are some things that you would expect as you're sitting down, but that interviewee should really communicate across the table?
I think that it's really important to have concrete examples of the day-to-day actions that you'll need to take in that role. And that, I thought you hit the nail on the head with the gentleman yesterday, Kyle, when you stepped in and asked for, you know, times when someone's going through conflicts. You know, tell me about a time when. I think those questions are super important to be asked, but as the interviewee, you need to have the answers to those, and you can really base it off the job description and learning more about the company. So doing that preliminary research to know kind of what you're walking into. Obviously, the gentleman yesterday wasn't expecting to walk in and have two people from opposite sides of the country sitting in with him,
right.
But he certainly handled the questions well and gave those concrete examples. I know you were impressed with someone.
Yeah, a funny one is just he got an award in college for design, and so I was like, well, what piece of work got you that award? He's like, I have no idea. I'm just a teacher's pet, and they kind of gave me the award. And we're like, all right, we can buy that. All right, so if you're a teacher's pet, that means other people have liked your work. So.
Well, and the honesty was impressive. I think that's the other piece, is making sure that you're authentic. You're not trying to mold yourself into the role, but knowing how you can complement it and be able to articulate that.
All right, so now I think it's important to look at, you've got honesty, you've got integrity, you've got, we want to match not only the honesty part of it, like answer truthfully, but also integrity within the role that you're applying for. So you want that resume to match up.
Right.
You want them to really kind of show you and display that they could be a good fit for your team.
Absolutely.
And that's both career skills, interests, but it's also just basic human nature.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that we've been touching on, is that the interview process is really no different than going to a housewarming party, something we spoke about at your team meeting, going to on a date, you know, brush your teeth, make sure that you look nice, but, you know, also be hospitable. If you're the person who's hosting, be hospitable. If you're the person that's visiting, make sure that you don't overstay your welcome, and make sure that you're really thinking about just kind of classic things that your mom would teach you, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So now, as we are the interviewer, I think that it's really important to have some structure behind the interview process so that it makes the interviewee comfortable.
Right.
And so what I try to do is I try to have as many touch points with the interviewee before we bring them in.
Right.
I think it's really, and I used to do this, and so I learned from not doing it very well, but I think it's real unfortunate when someone spends so much time getting ready. It's probably one of the biggest meetings that they're going to have that week when they're coming in and interviewing, and you're not prepared.
Right.
Number one, or number two, you haven't done enough prep work, not just in prepared for the meeting, but prep work prior to see if they should even be sitting there.
Right.
And I think that that's real difficult. So our process, what we do is we do several pre-interview kind of advancement levels. And so what happens is someone gets the resume online, they look at the job description that we've put together. We've rehearsed that job description. We create a key results area, which is called a KRA, before we even post the job. And so the idea there is We want to be able to communicate what we're looking for even before we bring this person in the door. So we're not just putting a very generic little ad together. We're writing witty posts just about how that job should look. And then the next step is we get the resume in and we don't just say, okay, come on into the office. We have an immediate response that says, here are 8 questions that I've scripted. If you'd like, we'll provide that to you in the show notes here. So those 8 questions are just questions that I find interesting. And they can be things like, how do you start your day? Who are your greatest influences in your life? The 2 people who are the greatest influence in your life. And what I want to know is a little bit about them personally, because I feel like I can train and teach skills. And a lot of people learn by being in the office. I can't train and teach how you were brought up.
Right.
And I certainly can't train and teach the way that you work on a daily basis. And so that's the thing I'm looking for, just how that person is personally. Then finally, we get to the fact that we do a phone interview before we end up actually bringing the person in. And the whole point is we're trying to create several touch points with several key members of our team so that this person gets a well-rounded approach of who's there, but they also have several opportunities to show their true colors if they're kind of faking it in their first impression, in their first interaction. So we're trying to kind of cull them out over several periods before I actually sit down in the room with them and interview them.
Well, and I think that brings up another good point, though. And it not only gives you a chance to ascertain what this type of person is, but it gives them an opportunity to learn about your company and make sure it's a fit for them, too. Because the last thing you want to do is make a hire and then have that person leave, 30, 60 days later. Because then you're stuck retraining someone else and taking time out of your day. I'm still a competing broker, so I need that time. I don't have time to be retraining and rehiring someone.
And I think 2 things to your point is you are your own headhunter because you've done pretty much what they do for you. Mm-hmm. So there's a place, not that I make more money, that's not the point. It's just I don't have that gift and that skill set. Another big point is the questions that you said I scripted, the things that I want. And I think to hire somebody, you have to know yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I've been going on this journey, not real like meditation in the woods for days on end, but like over time you start hiring people and you start knowing people and you're like, that person really rubs me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even do anything. Mm-hmm. Or this person, and you start to get help. So like I have a business therapist, like I'm not ashamed of it. I go to therapy and we talk about stuff like this because that has helped me figure out like give the locus the control. I cannot stand when my agents come in and just complain and say, that wasn't my fault, that shouldn't have happened, everything's their problem. That's not true. We're problem solvers. So when people are always, it's somebody else's fault, it just internally just melts me and I just want to blow up. Mm-hmm. So now I've started to put that assessment out there because I know who I can't work with. I know that I'm not a micromanager. Like I had to learn that. I didn't realize that off the cuff. And so now I have to make sure I don't hire people that need to be micromanaged because it's not going to go well. So I think like you said, it's my questions, it's what I want to know, because at the end of the day, it's your company. And whether your company is right, wrong, good, or bad, it's your company, and you're either going to succeed because of you or fail because of you. And if you surround yourself with people that accentuate your positives and hide your negatives, you're going to be a whole lot better off, but you can't do that unless you know yourself, your strengths, and what you need.
Yeah, so I love all the takeaways I have there is that don't create a process that you're not willing to go through on your own. Yeah. So interviewer, if you expect them to fill out a StrengthsFinder assessment or a DISC personality profile, which is what we use, you need to know it on yourself and all of your other team members too, and figure out where the gaps are.
Yep.
As you're hiring for someone, you're hiring for a role. They may need to be a utility player. They may need to be a real specialist, like that starting pitcher, if we're gonna use a baseball analogy. And so I think it's really important to make sure that know your own self before you ever decide to bring someone else, because it's gonna end up being a big mess. It'll be a nightmare. Right. And I think some of my first hires, bless their hearts, I was struggling trying to figure out how I was gonna operate in business, and they were kind of struggling along with me. And you have that daily interaction that really is a little bit uncomfortable at times, because you maybe were trying to impress them during the interview.
Yes.
Something we uncovered yesterday, and it's true for all of us, is that we have a tendency as business owners, whether you're a solo agent trying to add on that first administrative person or a broker owner, you've got, or a team leader adding the 5th or 6th person on there, you've got this tendency to say how great we are. And I think that that's something that's really important to avoid. And most of the questions I had yesterday were personal questions. I want to know how you overcome adversity. I want to know how you not only handle challenges in life, but also challenging people.
Right.
Tell me about your worst employer. Tell me about someone that you really struggled with over the last year and why. Like, what was the issue? Because what will inevitably happen is as they're starting to think about real life situations, it becomes more difficult on the fly to tell a lie. And so I think that what I'm trying to do is just ask those questions and really kind of, if you feel like they didn't answer it the right way or truthfully, which would be the right way, dive deeper into it and say, I need you to kind of poke into that. And so the next part of our interview process that we do at Calibrate Real Estate is we make sure that we have multiple people on the team interviewing. Now, what do you say? Well, what if I'm a solo agent? I don't have multiple people on the team. You can have other people in your organization. So, Eric, you had mentioned that your broker owner, your managing broker, had suggested, hey, I'm really seeing that you need this help here. And you had someone intervene and then say, you know, you need to add someone onto your team.
Absolutely. And I mean, our process is obviously a little bit different than both Kyle and Brad's. And I mentioned I've always made accidental hires. So I've never gone out and tried to seek someone out. But when someone's come to me or made a suggestion to me, we do have that first like phone interview, that first more of an informal sit down just to see if it's even going to be a fit. And then we do the more formal interview in the office. And during that time, I always make sure that someone else from the team, whether it's our admin in the office or another one of our agents, is able to sit down, not only to get their feelings on the candidate, but so that the candidate can get a feeling, as an honest impression of how I work as a broker, as the team leader, and to make sure that, you know, they fit the need that we have for the team at that time. I'm really proud to be able to say that, you know, we have all different personality types on our team, but it works.
Right.
And I see that with your team here, Brad. Over the last couple of days, you can tell there's a lot of different people in that room, but they all really genuinely care about each other, and that's important. You were talking earlier, Kyle, about culture. You know how that everyone's talking about culture, but being able to build something out where everyone's invested in going towards the same goal is what's probably most important during our hiring process.
Yeah, culture is real interesting. The thing that we were commenting about, and I'll say it again, is that every organization, every geographic area has a culture. It's just whether it's a good culture or a bad culture. And I think everybody's preaching on like culture, culture, culture. The reality is you have a culture whether you like it or not. Right. It's just a question of how it's perceived. Right. And it's the collective beliefs and also personalities of the people within that culture.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, hey, we do things a certain way here. Well, that's your culture.
Yep.
And it can be a bad culture.
Absolutely.
It can be a real toxic culture. And so I don't believe that there are people out there that have no culture. It's either good or bad. So I agree with you that you're adding someone to your family. You're adding someone to this group of people that's going to work together for 8 to 10 hours a day, sometimes on weekends, certainly early mornings. We met your team as you guys were doing a photo shoot this morning. Everybody's like, you know, just gotten ready. Everybody's all dressed up and looking nice, but it was early.
Yeah.
And you know, are people morning folks or are they night owls? You know, and so it's I think that's important. You just got to make sure that you're hiring someone that's going to be a good fit,
right.
Because that's a benefit not only to you, and it may feel like that way that we're communicating. It's a benefit to the employer. It's a benefit to the employee.
Absolutely.
This is someone that they're going to invest a lot of time and energy, and I think it's important to add the right people to the team.
Well, and also think about the person you might be hiring. If you're hiring the wrong person for the wrong role, you're going to find out, not maybe very quickly, but very soon, and they're putting their livelihood in your hands. So if you're not doing your job and hiring them correctly, or that you think is correctly, then you're setting them up for failure. They might be unemployed shortly.
Sure.
Then you got laws and everything else that come in. There's a lot of legality. And so that's where I also caution a lot of people to know what you don't know. And I think a lot of times in this industry, people, the thing is, make a team. We're all type A personalities, a lot of people are type A personalities. A lot of people don't have the gifts that we have on the sales and the management side. A lot of people can't do that, and they try and be team leads, and they have no business doing that. So, hey, let's be a team today. Well, that's great, but you have no processes or checklists or anything in place to make this thing work. So you're going to sound really great to the interviewee, but like you got to make sure you can back it up too.
Well, I think that's something that's really important to consider is before you make that first hire, have those systems and processes in place.
Right.
You need to sit down and like – ascertain those key areas and what this person's going to do on a day-to-day basis, so you can paint that picture and not necessarily learn on the fly with the person, but have some semblance of structure, because then you can improve it when you make your next hire. You can work with them out there, but you can't just go in blind.
Right.
So step-by-step process, we've spoken about a few of these things, but I want to roll through a 12-step process that I have become aware of through an awesome coaching program that I'm a part of. So I'm going to give you something that I consume, but then also it's a great podcast. So if you just want to listen free to the Entree Leadership podcast, Entree Leadership is a book that was written about 5 years ago by a business owner named Dave Ramsey. And so they have a 12-step process to things that they think about before they bring someone on. And they say that they typically take between, I think it's something like 8 to 15 interactions with someone before they hire. Wow. It's about a 90-day process. And they do that in such deep level because they've learned through bad hires, just like we all do, that it's not worth it financially or from a time standpoint to bring someone on that should have never been there in the first place. Excuse me. So prayer and thoughtful reflection, that's step number one. And Dave jokes as he says, ask God to send who he wants to work with you and take the crazies, send them away. Get referrals. Amen. So something that we did was we posted on our Facebook page saying, hey, we'll give, I think it was $150 or $300 to someone if they know of someone that's looking for a job and they pass them on to us. So getting referrals from people that know and like your business, I think is real important. The 30-minute drive-by interview. So after we do, personally in our company, after we do all of those pre-hiring steps and they're actually sitting in the seat, 30 minutes. You probably should spend as the leader about 10 minutes speaking and 20 minutes listening.
That's hard.
Which is very hard. And it bottles it up. And so what I've done is that I've had people in my office actually knock on the door and say, hey, Kyle, it's been 30 minutes. You've got to get going to your next appointment. And I'll schedule an appointment with someone intentionally so that, and it's not to be rude, but just to make sure, I don't sit and park and talk about how great we are. Right. An opportunity for us to extract as much knowledge as we can in a very short window of time. And you can't do that if you're speaking the entire time. Resume and references, we spoke about that. Testing tools, there are several out there. Step number six, do you like them? And we've talked around this, but you're going to be working with this person a long time, and do you actually like them? And that'll feel like, oh, I don't know if the HR manual should say that, but the reality is, if they're not going to be a good fit to work with you, they shouldn't be there, and you don't want them there. Do they light up? Are they passionate? Can you see a little twinkle in their eyes? They're talking about doing graphic design. Yeah. And I think that what ends up happening is certain people say that they want to work in a position, but you can tell that they're kind of just mailing it in. And so I think that's another thing, just an overarching theme in the interview process is, are they passionate? Do they light up? And try to figure out what they light up about. Is it their kids? Is it their last job that they had? Is it their volunteering at their church or their neighborhood? The next one Dave does, and he's in the topic of money, is personal budget and mission statement. So he doesn't expect most people to be nerdy enough to have their own mission statement before they work with them, but we're going to share your mission statement of the company and then ask them to create one within the first 90 days. Personal budget, the reason Dave did this, and he talks about it in his book, is that he hired someone that was financially not capable of working at the salary that he was hiring for. So what ends up happening is someone maybe has wishful thinking or they think your organization's cool and maybe they can advance quickly. And it ends up creating some really uncomfortable conversations in 6 months.
Yeah.
Compensation calculation, benefits, and policy review. This is kind of the, kind of the rigid part of it, but do you have a policy manual? If so, review it with them prior. Talk about your comp. Talk about your benefits. Key results area. We talked about that before. Make sure you script the job description and have a one-page document that the person can say, my leader's gone for 2 weeks because they're traveling all over, that they know what they're supposed to be doing. And so you should do that way before you do the actual interviews. Two final steps. One is my favorite to talk about, and it's the spousal interview. So we take the leader. So in this case, a lot of times it's myself, but if you have a pretty large organization and you've got divisions or departments within that organization, the team leader, their spouse, and then the interviewee and their spouse or significant other, if they have one, go out to dinner and break bread and spend some time outside of the office. Mm-hmm. The whole key here is you're trying to take all of the guardedness of sitting down in an interview and getting them to communicate normally. Plus, you get the ability to see their spouse and how they interact as well, which I think is important. We're spending a lot of time together at work, but you're also gonna have some stuff come over, spill over from time to time. If I'm having a tough day in the office, my wife Courtney's gonna know about it, and vice versa.
Yeah.
We had a really long night because someone's sick or something's going on, that's gonna bubble over into my work.
Absolutely.
So it's important to get to know that person's spouse before they start working.
I'd be hired everywhere if they interviewed my spouse. So I'd start doing it, taking her with me.
And then finally, all of our hires and all of Dave's hires are as well are on a 90-day probation. So what that means is that it's a very low commitment from both sides of the table. we don't mind so much if you say, hey, within the first 90 days, this is just not going to work for me. And then we're also on a very low level of obligation. Once they pass that 90 days, they get the brand, they get the tattoo.
Yeah.
They're part of our team.
Right.
You know, we're branding literally our logo on their arm. No, just kidding. But what ends up happening, though, is that you want to have a low level of commitment. And one of the things that we did, it's kind of interesting, and I would love to hear you guys talk about interns, part-timers, et cetera,
yeah.
But we recently hired someone for a part-time role and then grew them into a full-time role. And it was really a good little test period. We grew them into a full-time role because we realized at part-time they were just knocking it out of the park and doing awesome. And there's some hires that I really wish that I would have kind of slowed that process down and said, hey, look, the first 90 days is just not going to be a high level of commitment because they wouldn't have stayed. So interns, part-timers, what are your experience with that, and what are some suggestions in that area?
So I don't have really any part-time employees. I have a contract employee that does our bookkeeping that's mm-hmm. part-time, but that's totally different. We do interns. We're at the University of South Carolina. It's right down the street. So we actually have, I mean, we had an intern this last year. He reached out to me. Really enthusiastic, really good resume. He's in real estate. There's actually a degree in real estate, which floored me. And he's like, I want to work there. I want to learn. I want to know this. And I was like, sure, that's fine. And it was, I actually paid him because I kind of feel bad because I do work people.
Mm-hmm.
And he has worked himself into, like, in 2 years, like, if he wanted a job, I'd find a role. Because it's not that he can do everything and that he's the best at everything, but he can work and he's driven and he is committed. So I think it's a really low, low impact way of like testing people out, because mm-hmm. these are people that might be in college that are trying to figure themselves out and have natural ability. They just need some guidance and they need to learn the tools, but you can't teach work ethic. You can't teach honesty and integrity. And that's what I think I found in a couple of the interns we've gotten.
For sure, yeah. And with our agents that we're hiring, we've never hired a part-time agent. The part-time agents that's on the team now transition to that role because of other life events. But the conversation that we have when we're talking to new agents, not necessarily the admin staff or what have you, but are you in this as a job or a career?
Right.
We have that discussion, and we talk about, you know, how we're going to do business planning. Like, they need to be as invested in our process as we are in them. So we don't hire part-time. Being in Boston, we will likely explore internship opportunities just because we have so many institutions of higher education there. And it's inexpensive labor that can come help us with task-based things. But again, that would probably be more of a contract employee to us than a W-2 salaried part-time position.
And the fun thing about interns is you get to invest in them at a very kind of formidable part of their learning.
Yep.
And it is a low level of commitment for both parties, so it's kind of treated as like, hey, maybe a summer job.
Yep.
They get to learn a lot about, I mean, I had an impactful internship when I was in college that really marked my career for the next 10 years, where I was working in a commercial bank, and I learned every single part of the commercial banking process, from when someone comes in and puts a deposit to when it goes out of the lending division, and what that looks like. I chose not to go into banking because of it, but I actually chose to go into commercial real estate, which interacts with a lot of local community banks. It was really cool, and someone believed in me. It was the big deal. The president of the bank said, you know, look, and I was like, I'll work for free. I mean, I want some experience.
Right.
And I think as a young person, that's key, is being humble enough to say, look, I don't know a lot about this industry, but I want some experience. And he said, look, I'm not going to make you work for free. I'll pay you minimum wage. Just simply because he said, I want you to be accountable to be in here instead of
absolutely.
Like kind of zooming in and out whenever you want. And so I think that interns can have a great spot in an organization. It can be good part-time help.
Yeah.
John Graft, who is part of 30 Under 30 as well, he's from Chicago. He works with a lot of interns, and he's got a very interesting approach that makes a lot of sense to me after he described it in an interview that I did with him. He said, look, I have them sit down with me and say, look, you're going to be either on a 10-week or a 12-week or whatever the time frame is, dependent on the semesters and all that, internship here. What do you want to do?
Hmm.
Like, what do you want to learn more about? Because in real estate, we've got marketing, we've got accounting,
right.
We've got so many different things. And I'm going to put you on a project,
right.
But it's a project that you want to do, not one that I want to do. I got 10 different projects that you can do. And the whole idea is that they're then sold out on it.
Yep.
And if they're not putting in the effort that you would expect, you say, look, this was your deal, like this is your goal to learn more about this. And it's worked out really well. John has had, I think he said, dozens of interns over his career, so it's pretty cool process. Final comment about hiring is, what do we do that fateful day when someone has kind of grown out of their role and is moving on? And I think that as a business owner, but then also someone that's just a team leader and a mentor, this is going to happen. There's going to be people that kind of get to the point where they needed that first hire or that second hire to kind of give them the experience that they needed. But then they're moving up and they're moving on. And so just talk about some reflections on both you doing that over your career, because we've all done that.
Yeah.
And then also what it's like to be on the other side of the table when, you know, you've got that person, you're like, man, I am so happy for you personally, but I'm so bummed that you're not staying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going through right now. The gentleman that's helped us kind of create what we've done and helped formed a good bit of our brand and public perception is moving on, and it sucks. It's hard, but at the end of the day, it's still my company, right? So I've always said this, and I don't mean this as a threat to anybody. I'm never afraid of anybody leaving, because the day you are is the day you're pigeonholed, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've got a lot of work coming up, and I've got to find somebody to replace that. And I'm super excited that he's going to go into the next phase, and that he's going to take his learning, and if nothing else, he's going to be one of those good realtors in the business that knows the ethical right ways of doing things, and he's going to help change the way real estate's done in Raleigh.
So now you have a great person to refer up there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so on the flip side, though, I've also had the other side, to where I've had to let people go. Mm-hmm. I've heard people are going to go work with competition. And that's where people kind of cast judgment on some ownership sometimes. But again, it's your company. You have to protect that. Somebody wants to leave, that's understandable. And if it's for the wrong reasons and you have to dismiss them, like, you've got to act swiftly. You've got to protect yourself. There's nobody's a friend once they're leaving under bad terms. And I know that sounds really rough, but you've done a lot of stuff to create your brand and your processes and you as well. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to protect that. And if you don't, they will take it. They will destroy it. They will not use it to the right. And those are your internal knowledge. So like some of my agreements with my agents and stuff, it's scary. There was actually a question last night on the 30 on 30 group. It said, hey, I need a buyer agency agreement. Has anybody got one I can use? The one my attorney's done is a little long and it's kind of scary. And I literally replied back, there's a reason for that.
Right.
Because this is your business. Mm-hmm. Everybody else can go away and you can work out of a trunk, but it's still, you know, the Arabrola team, Calibrate Real Estate, it is your stuff. And so you've got to, if you can't do that, you need to find somebody who can do it for you, because you've got to protect home bases sometimes.
Right. I think the best advice I got when I was ending my business partnership was I was talking to a gentleman who has a background in counseling, and he said the conversation needs to go out of concern. Like, obviously, if something's become toxic enough that you're thinking about ending it, the way that I phrased the ending of our partnership was like, clearly this isn't working out for you. And that gave him the opportunity to be able to say, no, it's not. Like, here are the problems and I don't think we can fix them, and walk away. So it's like that little dating analogy, like it's not me, it's not you, it's me. It's not me, it's you. Like, you, this is something that you need to work on. And again, like it allowed that partnership to dissolve, but our friendship still remains, because it was done in a way that was out of concern and out of care, as opposed to, this just isn't working for me, you need to go away.
And one quick soapbox on that is, I think a lot of people in real estate, they get in it and it's really, you don't know what's going on. It's unsettling. You're trying to get your business going. So what you do is you usually commiserate with a work person, and then all of a sudden you're like, let's be partners. And y'all would never have been friends outside those offices. Right. Like, you're probably the most opposite personalities. And all of a sudden you're going to be business partners. Yeah. Partnerships are not for everybody. Partnerships should not be the goal. I have a really, really good partnership right now, a really good partnership, but it's work. And I have people to help facilitate that. But we also had a partnership with a third partner that didn't work. And it was very expensive. It was time consuming. It was draining. And that person's a really good real estate agent. It just was not a good fit. So I see it a lot where people start in a company like, let's be partners. Be very careful of that. And if you do it, know how you're going to get out of it. Like, have it written down. Have an operating agreement. Because, I mean, I own property. I own real property. I own business. I own a lot of things with my partner that if things went sideways, we have to know how we can get out, so we don't have to be stuck in these nasty battles. Yeah. So I would always encourage people not to have partners as much as possible. And that's sometimes hard to do, because it's scary to go at it alone. And I commend you on the way that you've taken that and gone with it.
Yeah, I think that for me, I'm constantly reminded of, you know, I've got one marriage in my life, and that marriage is extremely important. And we're committed to life, and we made vows to each other, and we signed legal documents saying we are one. There's a lot of marriages that break up. Over 50% of marriages end in a divorce. And so I appreciate the way that you speak about partnerships, because I think a lot of people just kind of like fall into partnerships like, hey, it's cool, we should hang out. It's like, same the reason why people fall into being roommates. It's like, hey, like, think about this a little bit. Like, how's it going to work when all of a sudden you guys have a little bit of a spat? And so I think partnerships can work. Be very, very intentional about it. when it comes to hiring, be very intentional. This is all about intentionality. Script it out. You know, don't be so rigid that you can't adapt, but try to script this thing out, because we're going to be successful not because it just was happenstance, but because we tried and we planned. So I think this hiring discussion is great. I think that there's a lot of different things to think about. I would just say that the kind of the final thought on that is be extremely intentional. Having someone go. So I've left a couple of organizations, and I've had a lot of people leave my team, and I feel like the way that someone is treated when they leave is far more important than when they arrive.
Absolutely.
I think that as you're thinking about someone that's maybe taking the next step, the appropriate step, and it may not have you in that world, in that picture as they go on, you know, treat them with dignity. Even someone that you're having a dispute with, treat them with dignity and try to be calm. And it's easier said than done at times, but I would say that as well, as someone's leaving. So with that parting thought, thank you so much for tuning in. For Eric Rollo out of Boston and Brad Allen out of Columbia, South Carolina, I'm Kyle Malnati. You have been tuning into the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. And as I love to say, we will see you around the neighborhood.